You're listening to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Drive what Dan Hampton drives. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com today.
Hello and welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solly. I'm the senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolly. Joining us today via Skype, ChicagoFootball.com writer and USA Today's NFC North correspondent Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how are you doing today?
I am doing well. How are you, John?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little fired up, but joining us in studio, ChicagoFootball.com fantasy football writer JC Talon. JC, how you doing today?
Good. Good to be here.
Good. Guys, how was your fantasy weeks? JC, we'll start with you.
Well, my main league, I made a couple bad lineup decisions, played Peyton Manning over Andy Dalton, and thought about playing the muscle hamster, but went with Matt Jones in Washington, and those two decisions cost me the game, but didn't. What I do have going for me is in my family league, I did beat my mother-in-law. So
that's always good. Arthur, how about you?
Man, I want to try and get my mother-in-law to sign up for one of my fantasy leagues. That sounds quite gratifying. It was okay. A mixed bag, 2-2. Had Justin Forsett on my bench the wrong week, obviously. Ran out of patience there. I can't beat myself up too much for having Todd Gurley on the bench. I don't think anyone really had the stones to slot him after his debut in a tough matchup. But I know we'll get into Gurley a little bit, and I'm really excited about his prospects moving forward.
That's right. We will get into Gurley in a little bit, but I want to start with basically the hot topic in fantasy football over the past few days, and that is the controversy in the daily fantasy sports community with DraftKings and FanDuel. I wrote an article about this at ChicagoFootball.com. You can check it out. It's about 2,000 words, so if you've got some time, please check it out. But I do want to summarize it as quickly as I can, and that is this. What happened was Ethan Haskell, who is a DraftKings employee, posted an article on Sunday on week three on DraftKings content page listing the ownership percentages for players in DraftKings' biggest tournament, the Millionaire Maker. And the Millionaire Maker entrants put down $20, put together a fantasy football lineup, hope it's good enough to win the top prize of at least $1 million. That's a bad thing because it showed the public that DraftKings employees have access to data that players don't. And I think that we always knew that DraftKings had access to this data, but we didn't think that it extended to a content producer. Data analysts obviously have access to this information, but someone that is producing content and playing DFS, I don't think we were really aware that it went that deep. There was another thing that happened then that made it worse, and that was that Ethan Haskell then won $350,000 on FanDuel that same NFL week. If you are wondering, yes, DraftKings employees, until late Monday night, they aren't allowed to play on DraftKings, but they are allowed to play on FanDuel. FanDuel employees are allowed to play on DraftKings. Now, according to the New York Times, DraftKings and FanDuel put a temporary ban of employees playing on other sites, but the theory that gets created is this. Ethan Haskell leverages access to ownership data that only DK employees could get to gain a significant edge in constructing a $350,000 winning lineup on FanDuel. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think that's being way overblown nationally for a few reasons. I don't think it's reasonable to believe that this is actually actionable data that he had. And the difference, the reason is because FanDuel and DraftKings, FanDuel does not have a late swap. DraftKings does. DraftKings also put out a statement that Haskell didn't receive the data until 40 minutes after lineups locked, which means he couldn't have gone back to his FanDuel lineup that won $350,000. So I think it was just really bad timing and it looks bad, but I don't think that there was anything nefarious in there. The other thing is ownership levels can be reasonably forecasted. If you enter a Thursday contest on FanDuel, once those lineups lock right away, you can see ownership percentages for Sunday and Monday players. There are also a bunch of DFS sites out there that post this information for free. If a guy's popular on Thursday, he's going to be popular on Sunday. And the other thing is that Ethan Haskell still had to build a winning lineup. Even if you've got all this ownership data that other players don't have, you still have to build a winning lineup. You still have to make the right plays, and that's not an easy thing to do. You could, I think you could also throw forth another reason. Everyone's tired of the ads, and we see the ads every commercial break. Any chance we get to take down DFS, I think some people are going to take advantage of that. Here's where my biggest concern is as a result of this. I think the Ethan Haskell thing, there's being too much made of it. It's just, I think it's bad timing. I don't think that there was anything nefarious in play. We don't know the following things, though, as a result of this. How many DraftKings and FanDuel employees have access to ownership data? When they can access? How often they can access it? How long do DFS companies keep logs of employees attempting to access this information? Whether there have been any fraud investigations taking place at this site? And were they done internally or were they done by a third party? It makes me believe, like, I don't trust these sites at this point because I don't know who has access to this data and what's stopping a FanDuel employee or a DraftKings employee calling up a buddy and giving him ownership percentages before lineups lock. Or how about the lineups of a Shark player? You know, there's a guy, you know, I want Peter Jennings lineups before lineups locks. I want that information, but that's insider trading. That's the very definition of insider trading. So DFS sites really do have to make a couple of changes, I think, in order to build trust. And the first is allowing third-party audits, whether that's government regulation or not. There's really not a lot of trust in these sites at this point from some people, certainly from me. If you allow a third-party audit and allow as much transparency as possible, I'm going to start trusting you again. And I think site employees do need to be permanently banned from playing on other DFS sites. There's no point in trusting that they're going to use the data responsibly. Arthur, I'll turn it over to you. Where do you stand on all of this?
Well, there's a lot there, obviously, but overall, it just sounds like sketchy business to me. I mean, I couldn't agree more that these employees shouldn't be allowed to play on the opposite side, and it just seems it doesn't seem to be a level playing field, whether one employee has access to that information, the ownership levels, or however many employees have access to it. It clearly is skewing the playing field, so I have a big-time problem with that. I guess I'm curious. It seems like you covered this all pretty well. What happened? What became of his $350,000 prize, and what became of his employment with DraftKings? Can you fill me in on those two questions?
We're taping this at Tuesday, about 1:45. Ethan Haskell is still employed by DraftKings. His Twitter account went private, and for all we know, he was allowed to cash his $350,000. And I don't think he could have gone back into his FanDuel lineup and adjusted it and ultimately win $350,000 because of it. I think there's being too much made of that, but it does result in these larger questions of who has data, who has access to it, and what are they doing with it? We don't have any answers on that. DraftKings and FanDuel put out a joint two-paragraph statement on Monday, and I think they put it out kind of hoping this whole thing would go away. And it's not going away, guys. JC, where do you stand on all this?
Well, first of all, I've always preferred Eddie Haskell to Ethan Haskell. big Leave It to Beaver fan. You know, DFS is not DFS is not really my gig. I read some things about market inefficiencies and how this data might help somebody. I agree with Arthur. There's got to be a level playing field. Concern I would have is even if you stop the fantasy employees from playing, what's to stop them from giving the information to their friends if it is valuable? My big concern is, you know, I go back a ways, guys. I started playing fantasy football in 89, and the big issue then, you know, there's no internet and everything was done manually, but there were people getting busted for gambling, and I always thought that was so ridiculous. It was nothing, you know, different than a football pool. And I just hope the lid doesn't blow off this thing where now they start looking at fantasy football on a global basis. So I sure hope DraftKings and FanDuel can get their house in order quickly.
One of the things that I saw that was brought up interesting was that people were wondering, is this going to be retroactive? Like, are they going to – what are they going to do, especially within the last, like, week or two, that you have players playing and they're wondering, did I lose because of this guy?
Yeah, and that's our producer, Dan Mott, and that's a good question. Right now we don't have an answer, and that's because DraftKings and FanDuel are basically buttoned up at this point, releasing just a couple of statements, and that's about it. And going to JC's point, you got to look back to 2006 with the shutdown of online poker, with the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act. That pretty much shut down, you know, any sort of poker online, but fantasy football, fantasy sports survived that as an exemption because it was deemed a skill game and not gambling. DFS, the argument that they've made, and this DFS is legal in 45 states. DraftKings is expanding to England in 2016, at least so far. The NFL has agreed so far with the legal stance of DFS, is that this is merely an extension of that, and that you generally see the same players at the top of the leaderboard, so those are the most skilled players. Now, with this data leak, we're not entirely sure that those skilled players are on the same playing field, or that it is a level playing field with everybody else. And those are questions that the DFS sites have to answer. And it's unfortunate that we're talking about this, you know, in October, and we should be talking about, you know, who the best plays are for the week, and some, you know, some of the exciting stuff that we're seeing in fantasy football and trends that we're seeing for a couple of weeks. But this is something that has to be addressed because this is a $1 billion industry. These companies have a $1 billion valuation, and there's a lot of money on the line, and there are a lot of people who are upset right now, and these DFS sites do need to answer some big-time questions, I think. With that, let's move on to some fantasy football news and notes from the past week. Andrew Luck, he was either the first or the second QB taken in everybody's draft. He's a top 1-2 price quarterback every week in DFS. He's got a Thursday game coming up against Houston. Is he still an every week start, JC?
I think for now he is. Obviously, there was something wrong in the first couple weeks. It goes beyond the GM and the coach and ownership.
Boy, that's a mess, isn't it?
It is, and I think that thing is going to get blown up. But Andrew Luck is still a really skilled player. The shoulder injury, you know, I'm not sure exactly when he got it, and we'll never know because they're not going to tell you for sure. But something has been wrong with him. If he can shake that, then if you own Andrew Luck right now, this would not be a good time to trade him. And if you were looking to trade for him, I couldn't recommend giving up too much for him because we just don't know what's going on with that shoulder. But if he's healthy, I think he'll round back into form.
Arthur, where are you on Andrew Luck right now?
You know, certainly the secrecy surrounding the shoulder injury is a big-time concern, but I kind of think Luck's earned the benefit of the doubt at this point. We've seen him overcome poor offensive line play, a lack of, you know, consistency throughout the offense with play calling and such over the past several years. So, you know, obviously we'll need some clarity on the severity of this injury, and on a short week, you'd have to think there's a pretty good chance that Matt Hasselbeck, who played pretty well for them, is going to get another start. But I just think given the investment, like you said, that everyone made in this guy, it's too soon to really jump ship at this point. You have to kind of take a wait-and-see approach. But if he's healthy and he's going to be in the lineup, he'd be in my fantasy lineup for the time being.
Arthur, the off-field stuff with the Colts and the seemingly never-ending sniping between Ryan Grigson and Chuck Pagano, do you think that may affect the Colts on the field too?
Well, I think that's when it helps to have someone with the kind of intangibles of an Andrew Luck and some of the veterans in that locker room, whether it's you know, a Robert Mathis or a Frank Gore. I know Gore hasn't been getting it done on the field the way people expected, but I think that they can overcome this stuff, although the level of dysfunction is certainly, you know, it's pretty impressive at this point. And I guess a Jim Irsay run organization and some of the way that he wants to have control over everything that's going on there, maybe we shouldn't be so surprised. But I think these are the times when you lean on a quarterback, even when he's struggling, and you look at some of the leadership ability of an Andrew Luck, and it would give me confidence that they can overcome some of those distractions.
All right, back to on-field performance. Peyton Manning, two more interceptions this week. Same deal with Andrew Luck that we asked. Is he still an every-week start, JC?
I think the answer to that is no. He is a mid-level fantasy quarterback, a couple notches above a Jay Cutler maybe. But I think, you know, you have to look week to week. There's a lot of debate about his arm strength, and really I think the debate needs to end. He doesn't have any arm strength. I mean, really, he's on my team. I'm a big fan of Peyton Manning, smart, gutsy, but he's really doing it on a wing and a prayer right now. He just does not have the arm strength. There was an interception that he threw in that Minnesota game. It was a toss to Demaryius Thomas in the flat. And the linebacker, Anthony Barr, they said he baited him. But the truth of the matter is he moved maybe a foot. I mean, that ball was thrown at about 35 miles an hour, and it was an easy pickoff. So Peyton Manning, I think, You can start him week to week. He's going to get you some points, but he's not going to get you a ton of points.
Arthur, who would have ever thought we'd be saying this about Peyton Manning, huh?
Well, you know, I got to be honest. He's not a guy I was looking after in the preseason, but you're right. I mean, the fall from grace is pretty staggering. And, you know, we have to remember he's 39 years old. He's working with a new offensive line, and he's working in a new offense. So while I'm still not ready to completely write off Peyton Manning, I would certainly agree with JC that he's a week-to-week proposition at this point. I guess the good news is that, of course, the Broncos get Oakland this week, a secondary that is among the worst in football. So I think I'd have a hard time resisting the temptation to roll him out there. But like I said, he was a guy that I was steering clear of. I don't have him, so I'm not in that situation of a start sit with Manning in any leagues.
All right, moving on. Welcome back to Fantasy Relevance, New Orleans Saints. They look pretty good against the Cowboys on Sunday night. And here's their upcoming schedule, guys. At Philadelphia, that's a pace-up game. They're going to be have a few more possessions. Versus Atlanta, the defense has been all right in Atlanta, but not fantastic. And New Orleans will be at home. At Indianapolis, that's a very beatable defense. Against the Giants, who have allowed the most passing yards through the first 3 weeks, at least, in the NFL. And then home versus Tennessee with a secondary that we like to pick on in fantasy sports. Is this a buy-low opportunity for New Orleans, Arthur?
Well, I love how you pointed out the schedule, because obviously there's one shootout opportunity after the next here over the next, you know, 5-6 weeks. So that is a huge part of this. And, you know, certainly we saw some encouraging signs. I think few of Drew Brees' 400 touchdowns have meant more to him and the organization than obviously the game winner to C.J. Spiller. I think Spiller might be the key here. Getting him more involved obviously was a huge boon for that offense. And, you know, the backfield looks great. Mark Ingram owners were frustrated because they had a touchdown overturned there within 6 inches of the goal line, but he's been pretty consistent. You know, the running game is a positive, but I still have to look at the receiving corps, and I wonder a little bit. Brandon Cooks has done nothing. I know Josh Hill finally got that touchdown, but he's otherwise done nothing. Marcus Colson has done nothing. So while I'm excited about the resurgence of Drew Brees in that offense, I still kind of have to wonder where the receiving production is going to come from. What do you guys think?
I'll give you a name. How about Willie Snead, the young wide receiver who is really, I think, passed up Marcus Colston and become the number three wide receiver. He's really impressed me so far as a guy who could emerge out of that offense. Now, it's still Drew Brees. It's still the Saints. It could go anywhere. But, JC, New Orleans fantasy relevant at least for the next few weeks?
Well, I did notice Snead is really moving up. He's a popular pickup this week, and you're right about the schedule. If you look at the defensive rankings of those teams, 21, 28, 27, 26, and Tennessee is actually sixth now, but I have a funny feeling by the time they play, they won't be top 10 anymore. but here's the problem. With Philadelphia, it reminds me of Philadelphia last year. You know, Drew Brees, if you have him, God bless you. It does look like you're in pretty good shape here. Mark Ingram, yeah, he's worth having. But who else are you going to have? Snead, I mean, 1 week Snead's going to have 5 catches for 112 yards and a TD, and then a week later he'll have 1 catch for 6 yards. And that's the way it's going to go with the Saints. So really, besides Brees and Ingram, I don't know who you'd want as a week-in, week-out starter.
Yeah, all right, well, we'll move on to rookie running backs. Arthur, I'm just going to let you go on Todd Gurley.
I mean, just fantastic. What's so exciting about Todd Gurley, obviously, it was the progress he made, not only from his first to his second start, but from the first quarter to the fourth quarter within that second start. He was a man on a mission by the fourth quarter. But I thought what was really cool, you know, Peter King and his Monday Morning Quarterback did a great job of outlining this. Gurley had the heady wisdom of a veteran. You know, not he willingly bypassed a touchdown that I know fantasy owners weren't thrilled about, obviously, but it was to help save that game for the Rams. And I think there's going to be so many more opportunities for him. And you know, there were a lot of shrewd owners who waited until the middle rounds to pick up a guy like Todd Gurley, and obviously now is the chance to roll with him until further notice. Just such an exciting prospect, and in a run first offense with Nick Foles actually showing some things too. Tavon Austin's showing some things. So I think the sky is the limit for Todd Gurley right now, no question.
Yeah, Arthur, can you explain the St. Louis Rams to me, because I'm totally lost on that. They had Pittsburgh at home, and that seemed like a layup, at least in terms of the defense they were going up against. And then they go to Arizona and win.
Yeah, you know, I just think it's the inconsistency that comes with having such a young roster, having a roster where you're willing to roll the dice on some guys who maybe have some question marks off the field. Jeff Fisher, Greg Williams, these guys have been willing to do that, and it's a risk-reward deal. So, you know, I think there will be some ebbs and flows still for them. You know, the offense isn't exactly loaded, as we just said, but Gurley's talent is just undeniable, and Fisher's commitment to running the football, to building the offense around that, you know, is just so exciting right now, and he just looks like there are no ill effects from that knee, only what is it, 10 months removed from the reconstructive surgery. So pretty promising stuff.
All right, JC, here's what I'm doing with rookie running backs right now. I'm doing everything I can to get Todd Gurley. I'm stashing Melvin Gordon until further notice, or San Diego decides to have, you know, more than two healthy offensive linemen. And I'm staying with Carlos Williams, especially with LeSean McCoy out. Am I wrong on any of those? Where do you stand on some of these rookie running backs?
You want... Yeah, I love youth. You guys respond pretty quickly to things. So let me be the wise old sage here. I cannot disagree with anything you're saying. Todd Gurley looked very good in that second half. At halftime, I'm writing my column about how, you know, it just doesn't look like it's going to be his year. Second half, boom, he goes out of control. But it was 1 week, so just I would temper that. Tevin Coleman, believe it or not, actually averages slightly more per carry than Devontae Freeman. Devontae Freeman for 2 weeks looks like a fantasy stud. I would hang on to Tevin Coleman. He's got no trade value right now, but an injury or something, fumbleitis, anything to Devontae Freeman, and Tevin Coleman becomes a really good back. I heard he's going to practice tomorrow. So I would hang on to him, but yeah, you got to stash him. You probably can't start him, and we'll just see where it goes with Freeman. Melvin Gordon, I still like him. I don't love him. Certainly, I would rather have Todd Gurley. I wish I did have Todd Gurley because I'd trade him to one of you guys for your team. Melvin Gordon's a guy, if you look next three games, home against Pittsburgh, at Green Bay, who can be run on, and then home against Oakland. That'll be the test. The next 3 weeks, we'll find about Melvin Gordon. Carlos Williams just had a bad game. Buffalo really laid an egg against the Giants. We all thought they would run up on them. But he's got 5.4 yards per carry. I would not be shocked if LeSean McCoy does not play much more meaningful football this year. That is starting to sound really bad. So Carlos Williams, he's a great buy-low candidate right now after the week he just had. So Todd Gurley stock through the roof, Tevin Coleman's stock down, Melvin Gordon stock down, Carlos Williams stock down. I'd probably be more apt to go after the guys with their stock down.
All right, and JC did address this a little bit, but we do have a Twitter question to address. All right, this comes to us from @ChicagoSports22, Tom Williams. I have Tevin Coleman. Is there any chance he returns as the feature back, or is it Devonta Freeman's team from here on out? JC, we heard from you on that. Arthur, where do you stand on Tom's question?
You know, honestly, similar standing to JC, Tevin Coleman is a kid I like a lot, and I just think that what Devonta Freeman has done, I don't want to take anything away from it. He has been outstanding. It's a very small sample size, and there's a reason that this Falcons front office spent the pick on Tevin Coleman they did 1 year after going out and getting Devonta Freeman. So I just think there's going to continue to be opportunity for both of those guys, and yet Freeman's still averaging less than 4 yards per carry. So I know he's had a couple explosive games and some huge carries in those games, but that's the guy that my expectations are a little bit tempered on. I really like Coleman's big playability, and he's the guy that you know, I think is not only a buy low, but if you have them, you need to hold on and wait and see how this plays out.
Yeah, I think ultimately it ends up as a timeshare by the end of the year. I think that might be the most reasonable expectation. But man, Freeman has looked good the past couple of weeks. CJ Anderson, Denver Broncos running back, is he droppable, JC?
Speaking of timeshare, I would say no. He got 11 carries last week, as did Hillman. Hillman had a 72-yard run. That's awesome, but you take out that 72-yard run. Sound a little like Dave Wannstedt used to sound. If it weren't for those three plays.
It's a pretty good one. Yeah,
but to be honest with you, without that 72-yard run, he's averaging 3 yards per carry. C.J. Anderson averaged more than four. C.J. Anderson on the season is 2.2 yards less than Hillman. Anderson has four more carries. That situation is fluid. If you have one or both, you need to hang on to them.
Arthur, what are you doing with these two?
Yeah, I'm in total agreement with JC. Again, I just think, you know, you didn't get C.J. Anderson unless you spent a first-round pick on him. So here we are, whatever it is, 6 weeks later. I just think it's too early. It's those are the kind of picks you have to hit on, obviously, to be successful. Typically in fantasy, I know it's as much about playing the waiver wire and coming up with some crafty trades. But I just think that given the investment, you need to wait and see what happens. And given Gary Kubiak's history, we've seen when two backs are going, he'll get them both involved. Obviously, neither of these guys has gotten started yet, but I get back to an offensive line that's still finding its footing, a quarterback who's still trying to figure out what he is in this offense, and you know, that Broncos defense is going to keep creating opportunities, I think, for this offense, and it should look good, I think, for both of these backs before it's all said and done.
All right, let's move on to our Week 5 preview. Best matchups, season-long DFS, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end, and defense. JC, we will start with your top matchups, top players at quarterback.
All right, I'm going to give you three of the no-brainers, and then I'll give you a value pick. At quarterback, top three, Brady, Rodgers, Ryan, and a value pick, Alex Smith. The Bears' defense has looked better. I just have a feeling that this is going to be a real up-and-down season for the Bears, mostly down. The Chiefs have not played a home game since September 17th. Must-win game for them. I think they're going to come out on fire. I think the Bears can be beaten, and with Jamaal Charles should have a huge day receiving, maybe not as much running, but receiving. And I think Alex Smith would be a good value pick.
Arthur, quarterback.
A couple guys that jump out to me on FanDuel, John, are Phillip Rivers at $7,500 versus the Steelers. Rivers bounced back in a big way after a tough week three. Put up huge numbers, three touchdowns last week. And I like Marcus Mariota coming off the bye. We saw what happened to that Bills defense last week. Mariota has been just terrific, aside from a little bit of turnover issues the past couple weeks. I think he's the kind of guy who will find a way to get that in check throughout the bye week. And even though the Bills are a good defense, Mariota at $7,400 seems like a sneaky play.
Yeah, I like the Rivers pick against Pittsburgh's defense. I railed against paying up for quarterback, but Tom Brady at Dallas. Dallas secondary doesn't scare me at all, and Brady just it seems like he's just going to throw for as many touchdowns as possible this year. I'm all for it. Running back, JC, who you got?
Top three, Bell, Charles, Lacy. Value pick, Doug Martin, the muscle hamster, getting Jacksonville at home.
Arthur?
Well, I already gave you the Todd Gurley love fest, so all I'll say is $6,700 on FanDuel against the Packers. That should be jumping out at you. Another one is Deion Lewis, I believe, at $6,900. We just talked about the matchup with the Cowboys. I think that the Patriots are going to score a lot of points and are going to be leaning on the run game. Deion Lewis continues to impress and seems to be a pretty good value play.
Yeah, and Todd Gurley's $4,300 on DraftKings. That seems almost like a free square at this point. Wide receiver, JC.
Three receivers who are known by their first names, Julio, Odell, and Demarius, would be my top three. Value pick, Steve Smith Sr. out this week with microfractures in his back. Kamar Aiken had a pretty good day last week. He's available in a lot of leagues.
Arthur?
I love it how microfractures, and I shouldn't say I love it. It sounds absolutely horrible, but he's week to week or out 1 week with microfractures in his back, man.
Toughest football player ever.
Yeah, Warriors. Yeah. I'm going to go back to that Saints passing offense that I was just dogging. I see Brandon Cooks at $6,800 versus the Eagles. Maybe this is the week. Byron Maxwell's been a huge disappointment. That Eagles secondary is a problem. I think this would be a good week to fire up Cooks. And Mike Evans, a guy who has been close, hasn't quite broken through yet, gets a Jaguar secondary that is banged up, not very good to begin with. $7,500 on FanDuel. I'm all in.
I like the Cooks picks. Need his minimum salary pretty much everywhere. If you really want to, you know, go dumpster diving, that'd be a good punt play. I kind of like on the opposite side. I like Jordan Matthews. I think Sam Bradford actually looked all right against Washington. Jordan Matthews in the slot against New Orleans defense sounds like a pretty good matchup to me. Tight end, I'm just going to assume Gronk is number one for everybody.
Yep.
And JC will move on to number two for you.
Kelsey, and then I have Charles Clay at number three. value pick. Richard Rodgers seems to be coming on for Green Bay. A lot of mouths to feed in that offense, but I like him. He seems to be emerging. Second-year guy, tight ends tend to come up in their second year. And remember, and I'm not endorsing him, but remember Antonio Gates comes back this week.
That's a good call. Arthur, how about you at tight end?
JC just took the words out of my mouth. Antonio Gates, $5,500 on FanDuel, gets the Steelers secondary. I think Gates is going to be a man on a mission. I really do. He is the rare veteran that got better as last season went on. So I can only imagine what sitting and watching for the first 4 weeks is going to do for him. And then Owen Daniels, I'm going to take a page out of the John playbook and look at that Raiders defense and its inability to cover tight ends. Owen Daniels found the end zone last week. I think he's a strong play to do so again. He's only $4,900 on FanDuel. That's a really, really good bargain.
All the old Owen Daniels, if you need a tight end and season long, I think he's a great pickup this week if he's available. On DraftKings, he's $2,700, which is almost the absolute minimum for a tight end. I will take every tight end against the Raiders the rest of the season.
Just if I could speak for the opposition, I'd say just one catch for 9 yards last week. So it was a touchdown. I'll give
it was.
That.
It was. Yeah. all right. Defense, JC.
You know, I didn't make a list of the top defense because it's pretty much rolling a dice anyway. But one thing I did notice, Detroit's defense looked much improved. Remember, they were a top three defense last year, three home games in a row. And it's a weird, if you look at the Lions' schedule, they have three home games in a row, they have another road game, and then they have three more home games in a row.
It's a weird schedule.
Yeah, it really is, and they've only played one home game up to now. So there might be something worth looking at. They get Arizona, Chicago, and Minnesota. Arizona's kind of tough, but Chicago and Minnesota are offensively challenged.
Yeah, if you're looking to stream defenses, that, I mean, I don't know if they'll be available, but that's not a bad bad choice. Arthur, defenses, what are you looking at?
I also didn't make a list, but I'm just quickly glossing over the schedule. Two that jump out at me are the Cincinnati Bengals at home welcoming Russell Wilson, who is not going to last 16 games. I've said it a few times. Behind that offensive line, they better figure it out because that's a big-time problem. The Bengals look like a good play. And then I'll go after the other quarterback who's struggling quite a bit, and that's not Russell Wilson. I shouldn't say that, but Colin Kaepernick certainly is. He's going to New York, that cross-country trip. The Giants have shown some signs of life on defense. I think he could probably do a lot worse than Big Blue this week.
I'll throw one out for you. I'm going to keep taking the defense against Jameis Winston. As long as Jameis Winston insists on turning the ball over, I know it's Jacksonville, but I don't mind taking him. Jameis Winston is a turnover machine, so until he corrects that, Jacksonville might be a decent cheap play. All right, that'll do it for the podcast today. Don't forget to get all of the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts and listen to our podcast each week. Our podcast is available on iTunes, so if you've not done so already, please head over and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Fall is here, and you can count on the dependable and long-lasting Silverado to be your harvesting partner. Check out all of these Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what Dan Hampton drives. Big thanks to our guests on today's show, Arthur Arkish and JC Talon. Our producer today was Dan Mott. I'm John Sally for all of us at ChicagoFootball.com. We hope you have a great week of fantasy football.